Guys, welcome to the Bitcoin with Dini podcast. Remember, everything here is just for your education. It's not financial advice, but my personal advice is to learn about Bitcoin. For me, it was one of the best decisions that I made. And if you enjoy the content, we just ask you to do your daily exercise. I won't be asked for push-ups today. Stretch your index finger, give it a nice little like, and I'd like to say Cade Mila Falcha to Greg Foss today. Greg, you're very welcome.
Now you got to tell me what that means. Thank you for having me. And is that Gaelic or something? Or
yeah, that's Irish. It sort of translates to 1,000 welcomes.
Well, 1,000 thank yous then. You know, it's a pleasure to be here. We did mention offline. I'm a Canadian with a partner and a Canadian as a partner in 8 Irish pubs in the Montreal area. I feel some sort of affinity to the Irish culture for sure. So.
Yeah, thanks, so that will win over our audience straight away, because if you're familiar with Irish people, we like to go on holidays, but we don't experience any of the other culture. We want to find the Irish bar. We want to drink pints of Guinness. And we're confused if it's not an Irish person working behind the bar. We're like, that guy wasn't Irish working there. You know that?
Well, here's the crazy thing. So we are the second largest Guinness distributor in Montreal. So we love Guinness. And one of our most successful waiters, because Montreal is French speaking, is a guy by the name of Mike Whitty, who's an Irish guy off the boat about, I'm going to say, 15 years ago. But he still has his Irish accent. And the French people love him when he speaks French with his Irish accent. He's one of the most successful waiters. So and he can butcher the language all he wants. At least he's trying to speak French. Yeah. And there's a lot of English people in Montreal too. But that being said, like a very successful Irish accent in Montreal goes a long way at our pubs. So yeah, a shout out to the Irish waiters in the Montreal area for sure.
Awesome, man. Greg, you've got like over 30 years experience in financial markets. And I'd like to just get straight into it and sort of pick your brains. Could you tell us a little bit about your interpretation of what's happening in the world right now? What's happening in the markets right now?
Okay. We want to keep this simple. You said, come on,
please, yeah.
Boss. Keep it as simple as possible. The entire markets rest on the head of a pin of central bank interest rate policy globally. And a derivative of that, which just means a function of that, is the strength of the relative fiat currencies around the world. Okay. So every currency in the world trades relative to the US dollar. Now I need your listeners to understand that all fiat currencies are melting ice cubes. Okay. Their value is being debased over time because of the increased supply of these dollars. And all fiats are melting. It's just that the rate of decay is different amongst the fiat currencies at different times. And that's a function of interest rate policy in the various countries. So to keep it as simple as possible, the Bank of England today and the European Central Bank both raised interest rates by 50 basis points. And yesterday, the U.S. Federal Reserve raised interest rates by 25 basis points. Those interest rate increases have impacts on the relative attractiveness of holding dollars in, or excuse me, holding currency in the various countries. So, you know, there's lots of international investors from Britain that have U.S. dollar exposure. There's U.S. investors that have Great British Pound exposure, that have Euro exposure, that have Japanese yen. All of this to say that it's really one trade that's happening now. And it's a rebalancing of the strength of the relative currencies in the world, where the US dollar has begun to weaken. And when the US dollar weakens, that is a good sign for risk assets. It causes a risk on attitude. So emerging markets rally. And remember, though, it's all based on the interest rates. Second derivative or first derivative is the currency. And then the second derivative is the risk asset appetite. OK, so let's not confuse it. If you want to watch anything, watch something called the DXY. It's the Dixie. It's the relative strength of the US dollar to six other global currencies, including the yen, the Great British pound, the Swiss franc, the euro, obviously. And this is a benchmark of relative strength of the US dollar. That hit a maximum of about 114 and is currently trading down at around 102 right now. Over time, you've seen things like gold rally because gold is priced in US dollars. But remember, gold priced in US dollars, as the US dollar falls, it makes it easier for foreigners to buy gold, right? Because their currency is relatively stronger. So they say, wow, I can buy more gold now. So the price of gold goes up when the US dollar goes down. And the price of gold goes up in US dollars, but it's not because of the US dollar as much as other people being able to buy gold in US dollars. So everything, these are all functions of the US dollar as global reserve currency. Well, we can get into the reasons as to why that's going to change over time. And this is why I love Bitcoin so much. But long-winded answer, it's all a function of the strength, relative strength of the US dollar and interest rate policy by the central bankers, the global central bankers.
Sure. I was only chatting to a friend of mine who runs an exchange there in Ireland. And he was saying it's kind of funny when we started in Bitcoin, we were just like plebs and we didn't pay attention to any of this stuff. And he was like, were you watching that meeting yesterday? I was like, yeah, we were watching.
Isn't that brutal?
Yeah. It's crazy.
A drunken old lawyer who has no clue about, really has never managed risk in his whole life. Okay. He's a lawyer. He's not even a risk manager, is setting policy for the world based off of a committee of people who are a bunch of old, backward-looking, you know, they even say interest rate policy lags by 12 to 18 months. Powell said that yesterday. Holy crap. Well, we're already seeing the effects of 12 months ago when interest rates were below 2%, and now they're at 4.5 to 4.75% target. We might be a bug in search of a windshield right here where, you know, the splatter is pretty ugly. So you got to be careful when you have these type of knuckleheads setting policy for the world. There's no question.
I was wondering how long it would be before we got a knucklehead. So I love it, man. It's a cool word because I was thinking in Irish, we don't have a sort of word like that. We just go straight for the F-bombs. But, you know, it's nice. It's a bit lighter.
It's lighter, but it also is such an apropos description of these guys. Like their brains are knuckleheads. Like they know the mistakes they're making and they continue to make the same mistakes over and over again.
Sure. And it's funny that what you mentioned there, I was going up the phone, up the stairs yesterday, I had the phone in my hand and I was listening to what one man was saying, trying to figure out how is that going to impact my life going forward? And I was going like, this is a crazy world. Surely there's a better way.
Well, there is a better way, but for the moment, everybody's on the edge of their chair listening to this guy. Like it's absolutely insane. And if you separate all the fluff and all the noise, it's very simple, people. They have to continue to print money because the global financial markets are in a debt spiral, D-E-B-T, debt spiral. We could run through the mathematics, but one of the most telling charts, Denny, was something that Lynn Alden sent out a couple of days ago. And she said it with the headline, basically, you know who Lynn Alden is, right?
Of course I do.
Okay. Yeah. Lynn is a brilliant young lady. The headline was the US Treasury actually published this. And it's a chart that shows the projections of the US federal deficit as a percent of gross domestic product. And it's just an asinine chart. Like there's no way it can exist, but it's the projections of the US Federal Reserve. And all it means is fiat currencies will continue to crater, which means you need to own hard assets, of which Bitcoin is the hardest and most decentralized asset of them all.
Can I ask you a real beginner question?
Sure.
So we have all this debt. It's like a debt-based Ponzi scheme that we live in. Everyone's encouraged to take on debt, okay? Yeah. And all the countries owe debt to each other. Can they not just go, like, what happens if they default? Why can't it continue forever? Why can't they just say, oh, sure, let's just start again, wipe out all the debt?
Okay, well, you can net it out, but who are the people that own? It's not just the countries that own the debt. It's all the pension plans. So, okay. Hey, that's fine. If you want your pension plan to not exist, go ahead, Denny, that's fine. If you want what happened with the UK gilt market and that disaster that happened with the pension plans that had that strategy, I can't remember what it was called, but it was a risk balancing strategy where they were levered in long UK gilt bonds, long UK gilts, they had to be rescued by the government. Well, the government could have said, no, we're not rescuing you. And then all the pensioners would have gone up in arms. So, yeah, you can cancel all the debt. Go ahead. How's that going to sit with all the employees that have pensions that they're counting on their pension for their retirement, or they're retired now? And it just said, okay, well, there's no more pension. Because that's who owns all the bonds. That's who owns all the debt is the pension plans.
I get you. And I suppose... one thing I was going to say is when I was financially poor and I didn't understand how money works, not that I'm an expert now, but I know a lot more than I used to know. I used to think being wealthy was having loads of money. And I always dreamed of when I'm rich, I'll have all this money in my bank account. And then I figured out that wealthy people, they don't really have money. They have assets. And it took me half my life to figure that out. And then I started to question, like, why didn't anyone teach me this in school? I'm not sure what the schooling is like in Canada, but like, we don't get any of this sort of education.
Okay. I love you, dude, because we also talked offline about lookingglasseducation.com. That's exactly the financial education that we're trying to teach the world that does not get taught in school. Why does it not get taught in school? Because if they taught you how the financial system actually worked, you would never put your money in a bank because it's so risky. Well, then the system doesn't work because it's all based around banking. And they need you to hold your money in a bank as a deposit that doesn't earn an appropriate return on capital so that they can fund the rest of the Ponzi using your capital. Don't you see? That's why they can't teach you this. Because if they did, you wouldn't be a depositor with, as you say, all this money. You'd actually be an investor with assets in real estate and gold and Bitcoin and hard assets that maintain their value. They don't lose their value by holding your money in a bank account.
Sure. For the average Irish person, like, we don't know what's going on. We know something's up. Our electricity alone is up 260% in 1 year. The price of a home in Dublin is now 416,000 euros and the average wage is 40K. So for, you know, younger people, it's off the charts that they can own a home in the capital now or even own a home full stop. How do you see this playing out as the decade goes on? Do you see this situation improving or continuing to deteriorate?
I think I understand your question as the difficulty of a young person to purchase a home right now. I see that continuing because I see essentially the debasement of the currency accelerating. And it's not really that your home is going up in value. It's just the unit of account, which is the currency, is going down in value relative to the home. So it takes more of this currency to buy the same home. Does sure. that make sense? So totally. Like when in this world of quantitative easing, infinity, because it has to, it's the mathematics, they have to continue to print money or else the system collapses. Fiat debasement is a certainty, which means you need to own hard assets, of which a home is a hard asset. Bitcoin is a harder asset than a home, but you can't live in Bitcoin, right? You can't live in a Bitcoin. You have to live in a home. So it's going to continue only because, now there could be, you know, It's not a straight line of the fiat, and the house prices don't go straight up, but over time they go up in a sawtooth manner because the fiat currency goes down in a sawtooth manner.
Yeah, and that was my journey into this whole financial rabbit hole. that took me over a couple of decades eventually to Bitcoin was, I asked my dad one day, I was like, I'm thinking of buying a house there, 100 grand. And he just says, oh yeah, mine was 20. And I was like, why was that? And then it just, he was like, oh, inflation this, but it always stood with me. And I was like, well, what's the crack here? How come it's, and like now the house is 416K for the same house. And I see the hurdle rate. I call it like, you know, a hurdle rate to a quality life. Let's say I'm in my 40s now. I worked hard. I got my house, but it was a little bit easier to a buddy of mine who's in his 50s. He didn't quite have to work as hard to get his house. But on the flip side, okay, a buddy of mine I was chatting to yesterday in his 30s has a really good job and struggled to get that house. Okay, and okay. I'm just going, so what about a kid in his 20s? What's his hurdle rate? Because it seems to be getting harder and harder and harder. You've got to do more for the same.
That's all true. That's the problem with soft money like fiat currency, okay? That is the fiat death spiral. And the people, only people that benefit are the people that own all the assets. They're called the cantillionaires at the top, and everybody else gets penalized. So yes, you've just described what's called the cantillion effect, which is only the top richest portion benefits, and everybody else is made poorer and has to work harder and has to put more effort in for the same house that they aspire to buy.
Yeah. It was interesting in listening to Jeff Boot, the way he talks about technology.
I love Jeff, yeah.
Technology is sort of masking almost, maybe, is scam too strong a word, but technology is advancement, with technology making things cheaper and yet the money destroying value. Technology is sort of masking the scam a little bit. So we don't quite know what's happening. But again, my thesis of just being when you think rationally, it's like, it's easier to build a house now. Why aren't they cheaper? Why are they so much more expensive? You know, just with really simple thinking.
Okay, it's a beautiful. So first of all, Jeff Booth's book, The Price of Tomorrow, is a beautiful book. It's a must read. I think it could be one of the three most important books I've ever read in my life. Okay. And for your listeners, I'm going to give you a spoiler alert. There's only about 5 pages on Bitcoin at the most. And the rest is about technology and about his experience. And he's a brilliant guy, brilliant entrepreneur, you know, running a company and the challenges of, you know, technological innovation. But it's just a great read. So yes, it's true that in a system where technology should be making life easier, we are being pushed the other direction because of the problems with a fiat currency that's debasing because of the money printer.
Awesome. And a nice time to transition into Bitcoin a little bit. So sort of for me, I use Bitcoin, I call it a plan B pension. Okay. And I speculate because of the hardness of this thing, that it's going to increase in purchasing power over time. And therefore every month I want to accumulate some more Satoshis for my future.
Attaboy.
Can you explain how you sort of see Bitcoin fitting into our future in terms of finance and the financial system?
Yeah, which is a lot. Let's keep it simple. Let's keep it simple. First of all, I am a Bitcoin maxi from a digital asset perspective, meaning I think Bitcoin is the only digital asset that actually offers any true value in the digital asset ecosystem. I say that because it's the only truly decentralized protocol. And Ethereum, firstly, doesn't know its supply, claims it is disinflationary, meaning they're burning tokens, but that can be changed at any time at the whim of a proof of stake fiat type of system. I don't want to recreate the fiat system in Ethereum, okay? You might may love smart contracts and all that. I don't own Bitcoin because of a smart contract. I own Bitcoin as a hedge against the fiat Ponzi. Now, everybody, therefore, needs to own some Bitcoin. I'm not telling your listeners you have to own 100% Bitcoin. I think that's irresponsible. But the wrong answer is to own 0% of your portfolio in Bitcoin. So owning 0% Bitcoin is actually more risky than having a proper portfolio allocation. The question becomes, what is the proper portfolio allocation for the average listener? And that, in my opinion, is somewhere around 5% of your total net worth. Okay, you have to add in your house there. You got to add in your stocks. You got to add in, you got to subtract out debt. Okay, but at the end of the day, your total net worth, 5% of it should be allocated to Bitcoin. Why is that? Well, because I think Bitcoin is the greatest asymmetric investment opportunity I've ever seen in managing risk for over 30 years. I have a price target on Bitcoin of over $2 million US dollars per Bitcoin in today's dollars, Danny. In today's dollars. I'm not talking about dollars that in 20 years are going to be worth zero because your house is going to be worth 25 times what it's worth today. I'm talking Bitcoin in today's dollars, a $2 million price target. We could run through the math on that, but I will also say, I'm not the only one saying this. Fidelity, one of the five largest asset managers in the world, has a price target of $1 million by the year 2030 and $1 billion US dollars by the year 2040 in Bitcoin.
Crazy.
Now, just think of how astronomically mind-blowing this is. That being said, let's focus on the here and now. I think Bitcoin has easily at least 20 to 50 times upside from here. Okay. So if your portfolio is 5%, and that 5% goes up 20 fold, all of a sudden that 5% is turned into something pretty huge. Now you're probably supposed to risk manage it and pair some of your profits, but that's the beautiful thing about the asymmetry. It's insurance. And if it goes to zero, which it's not going to, but let's play a binary outcome. It's either worth 2 million or it's worth zero. Well, you've lost 5% of your portfolio, but it was valuable insurance against this fiat Ponzi. I'm going to get a little confusing in mathematics right now, but you guys need to learn math, okay? Because Bitcoin is mathematics and mathematics is the base layer of language. So don't say, oh my God, Foss is talking math. I'm going to close my ears, because that's not what I want you to do. I want you to try and understand what I'm saying here. Using a price of $20,000 on Bitcoin, US dollars, versus my price target of 2 million in today's dollars, means that the market is only saying that I have a 1% chance of being right. Okay, 20,000 divided by 2 million is 1 in 100. 1 in 100 equals 1%. I'm not telling your listeners that I'm 100% certain that Bitcoin's going to $2 million US per Bitcoin in today's dollars, but I will tell you I have a far higher comfort level or probability than 1%. Another way of saying that is I'd say I'm at least 50% confident that it's going to my price target, which is to say Bitcoin should be trading at $1 million today, according to Foss. Now, Foss has 35 years of investing mistakes, okay? All I bring to the table is 35 years of mistakes, but I've survived because I survived by, first of all, changing my thesis as the information changes, and secondly, and most importantly, sticking to my winners. Bitcoin is a winner. I got involved in Bitcoin when it was under $1,000 a Bitcoin. And your listeners are going to say, oh, Foss, now you're trying to pump the bags because it's 20 times that high. And I'm saying, no, guys, Bitcoin's actually a better investment today on a risk-adjusted basis than it was when I got involved in 2016 at under $1,000. And the simple reason is because of the government, the global government response to COVID and all the BS. I'm sorry to, you know, I like to swear, I'm a trader. All the bullshit that the central banks and the money printing fools and clowns have forced upon the world. The reality is we are in a debt spiral that we can never recover from. And it's only a matter of time before the US dollar and all other global currencies continue to debase in value. And most importantly, some of them are going to fail. You're seeing money fail in Lebanon right now. You're seeing money fail in Turkey. There's 160 other global currencies besides the big G7 countries. Don't you think it's those countries that need Bitcoin more than anyone? Nigeria right now. So all I'm saying, guys, 5% is the target number. And incidentally, if the total world got to 5%, that is your $2 million price target in today's dollars. And I'm going to run through a little bit more math for you, Denny, and then you're going to kick me off the show because you said my listeners hate math. Well, fuck you guys, because you got to learn math, okay? You got to learn math. Math makes the world work. There's a total global assets are $900 trillion. That includes all global real estate, all stocks, all bonds, all debt. $900 trillion. I'm going to put you on the spot here, Denny. What is 5% of 900 trillion?
85. I'm dyslexic, so I can't do that.
Okay, so here you go. You're almost there. It was 45, right? 5%.
5%. I was thinking 10%. Sorry, yeah. I should have halved
it
then.
Well, okay, yeah. 5%. 5% of $900 trillion is $45 trillion. What is $45 trillion divided by 21 million Bitcoin? It's over $2 million of Bitcoin. That's the price target, Denny, for everybody to get Bitcoin. Now, here's the crazy thing. When people figure this out, they're going to want a lot more than 5% of their net worth in Bitcoin. Okay? So that's how you get to a lot higher numbers over time, as global asset managers understand the beauty of this trade. So start small, be disciplined, get yourself to 5%. Don't try and trade it. Try and be disciplined and understand that this is your insurance policy.
Super. I like the 5% because my parents are at 5%. And the reason they're at 5% is because I went to them and I explained Bitcoin many times, but they couldn't get it. How could they? My dad has never been on the internet. He's a man of the physical world. So he just says, I'm taking 5%. If we lose 5% of your life savings, it's not going to harm your retirement. It's not going to hurt you.
You and I are like brothers from another mother then, okay? Because that's exactly the pitch. Now keep going, and then I have a little story for you, okay, about my parents. Go ahead.
Sure. So their weighting was 5%, and my rationale was if I lose 5% of their fiat, because they're traditional Irish people, they don't understand investing or risk. It's just, you know, work and save the money. And they don't realize how much the money is debasing. And to them, you know, like 100,000 is a load of money, but like 100,000 in Ireland, you're not rich with 100 grand anymore. So I need to protect their money. So I was like, I want 5%. In my thought, at the back of my mind was, if this goes wrong, I'll give them back the money. But it's like, it's on a risk return basis, I suppose. It's like, it's a 5% risk. It's not going to affect your retirement, the quality of your life. It's not going to ruin you. It's going to be a kick in the balls. You're going to be like, to the friends, go, Jesus, Dini got me into this, but it's not going to cause any long-term damage.
Why do you always look at the downside? Why don't you look at the upside? Oh my God, I got in five. Now my 5% is worth 200%.
Exactly.
Like, think of the up. Now, okay, so I have a funny story for you. So by the way, perfect sales pitch to your parents, okay? Perfect. Well done, okay? That's the way you manage risk. Anyone who owns zero Bitcoin is actually taking more risk than your parents who own 5%. Okay, that's pure, simple risk management. I like to say Bitcoin is an IQ test in risk management, and most of the world is failing it because they listen to idiots like Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger, who have no incentive to tell you how the fiat Ponzi works because they have all their money invested in the fiat Ponzi, in the banks of the world, etc. But here's the story from my parents. My dad never had a loan in his life, ever. Bought his first house with cash, never had a loan, he didn't even own a credit card. And I get out of university, out of an MBA program, and I come back and I'm working in finance at a bank. Lo and behold, I'm working at a bank. And I say to my dad, you got to have a credit card. Just get a gold credit card. It's an image prestige thing. You're going to get points every time you buy something, get points. And, you know, I need you to have this card. He's like, Greg, God darn it. I've never had a credit card my whole life. Okay. Sign me up for the gold credit card from the Royal Bank of Canada. Okay. Woo. My dad's going to be a swinger. This is back in the late 1980s. Yeah. Right around 1988, let's say. So he applies for this gold card. And then he calls me up because I'm not living at home. He calls me up. He goes, Greg, I don't quite understand how these gold cards work. I go, how come, Dad? He goes, Well, it says I owe $5,000. And I'm like, well, did you buy anything? He goes, heck no, I didn't even receive my card yet. I go, uh-oh. His card had been stolen in the mail. And someone went out and bought a whole bunch of electronic equipment at the local music store, right up to the credit limit, literally $5 below the $5,000 credit limit. And my dad gets this bill in the mail. How do you think he felt? He's like, I've never had a loan in my life. And all of a sudden I owe $5,000. I'm like, Dad, don't worry. The fraud department is going to not charge you. Okay. They sent him another card. What did he do? In front of me, he took a pair of scissors and cut this card up and said, I don't need this shit. Okay. And it's the same thing. He's now, my dad, God rest his soul, has been dead for, gosh, I don't know. It's, I have to wonder if he's got to be dead for at least 10 years now. But the point is, it's a different generation. Would I have been able to get him to buy Bitcoin? Yes, I think so. Using the same argument that you just used. Okay. It's a risk management. You don't have to understand how the internet works. You don't even have to understand how a fax machine works. You just have to understand risk management and asymmetric trade opportunities, etc. So great work, Denny. I'm really enjoying this podcast. I hope you don't lose listeners because of you having me on, forcing math down their throat, okay? But I'm an engineer, okay? Everything is mathematics, people. Don't overthink it.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. I'm a terrible dyslexic, but once I have the phone, I can do math. And I'm actually, before I worked with my dad, I served my time as a steel fabricator, which is pretty much engineering. And I always find people who have an engineering mindset, they tend to really get Bitcoin earlier, or they just, it seems to be a lot of people in Bitcoin seem to have a sort of engineering type mindset or a good understanding of engineering.
Yeah.
Not that I'm an engineer, I'm a fabricator, but you know, it's a degree of engineering. You're building stuff, you're making stuff, you're using physics. I would like just to ask you a little bit about, I asked my audience, what should I ask, Greg? And someone came up with this, Bitcoin's trading like a risk asset right now. When does Greg see it not trading like a risk asset? Because I don't think it's a risk asset. And I see it very different.
I think it's changing. It's a great question. And I'll tell you quite honestly, I don't have that answer. It will stop trading as a risk asset when people actually understand it's insurance. And insurance is a risk off asset, meaning as the world gets more risky, you want your insurance. Okay. But right now the world has it programmed as correlated to the NASDAQ, or more importantly, correlated to the DXY. Okay. We talked about this at the outset. But Bitcoin over time will come to be appreciated as insurance. And therefore, it is actually the opposite of a risk on asset. It is your portfolio insurance. And when risk increases, meaning it's measured by the VXY, the volatility index, Bitcoin should be going up in prices. The world is scrambling for protection. I don't know when that's going to happen. I'm highly confident it will happen, but I can give a prediction and not a price, or a price and not a time, but never give both, right? Never say it's going to happen by this date. Then you end up looking stupid. So I'm just going to say, I think it'll happen. Will it happen within my lifetime? I'm 60 years old. I think I have, knock on wood, I think I have a couple more decades to live, but I might be wrong. But it should happen within my kids' lifetime. And that's what I'm planning for, is for my kids. I am investing in Bitcoin for my kids. Now, please understand that. A pension is for you to live, but likely a lot of your pension is also to try and pass something along to your children. So I'm trying to pass something along to my kids that I think will be extremely valuable. It is thought of as insurance. By the time I pass it on to my kids, this horrible calamity that happens in the fiat world have taken place? I don't know. But I sure as heck want to own Bitcoin in the event that that happens.
Yeah, I've heard you mention like a gamma squeeze, and I start to think of it like a...
No, we're not allowed to talk. We're not allowed to talk about gamma squeezes, because that is third level Okay, so I'm cutting you off there.
Yeah, but I'm gonna pull it back. I'm gonna pull it back.
Okay.
Dini's version is just mass capitulation, and is what's happening in Nigeria a little glimpse into the future, that they have this central bank digital currency, they're trying to onboard people into it, and people are running the other way as fast as they can, and they're prepared to pay 60% more to buy their Bitcoin. Sir. And that's just a vision, because the digital money is coming to the euro, it's coming to the dollar, you know, certainly all these countries are working on their digital version of it.
Yeah.
And is this just a little glimpse into our future, and a little thing to go, listen, you can see where we're going. Don't wait until the ship is sinking before you go looking for the life jacket. You know, you've an opportunity now to get off the thing.
Okay, yes, sir. I'll just have to answer. Yeah, well said.
Yeah. And so my other question is, how do you, like, my understanding of Bitcoin when I'm teaching it to people, I start with digital gold because I think that's easy, because you can hold a physical gold coin in your hand and you can talk about the scarcity and all the other properties that make gold good. And you can sort of go, well, this is just like, you know, a digital map instead of holding a bit of paper in your hand, and it's so much better. Or you can go with the music. You can go with, I hold a CD in my hand and I talk about Spotify. But to me, I see Bitcoin as, you know, if we talk about the absolute end game, I think of it as a binary thing that eventually, if Bitcoin continues to be successful, it sucks in all global money eventually. It can't half be there. We can't finish at 5%. We have to denominate everything in Bitcoin. Would you agree with that, or how do you sort of see it in the really long game?
Okay. I'm actually of the opinion that some of the major global currencies will continue to exist, because fiat currency is actually good for things like international trade, right? It avoids the necessity of barter. I don't think all fiats will exist in the world. I think it'll probably be down to a handful. Right now, there's 160 odd fiats. Unfortunately, small countries will lose their autonomy. They'll be on a standard that includes a store of value, not a currency, called Bitcoin, and a currency that's a global currency, but it's not a reserve currency, okay? It's a global currency. It might be part of a basket of currencies of the top five economies in the world. But I don't think Bitcoin will ever, and it doesn't matter whether it does or doesn't, because Bitcoin is a store of value, whereas a fiat currency is a transmission mechanism for global trade. And the two can coexist. And this is, you know, there's a lot of proud Americans who want to maintain global supremacy in their assets. Well, I think Bitcoin is going to supplant U.S. Treasury bonds as the global reserve asset. But I actually think the U.S. dollar could survive, and it could actually be a benefit to the USA if they embrace Bitcoin, because it'll assure that the U.S. dollar remains the global reserve currency. You don't store your money in that currency. It is just the pricing mechanism for the fiat world, whereas Bitcoin is your store of value. Where does that leave U.S. treasuries? Well, it's going to be an interesting battle in the bond market as to what really a U.S. treasury is. That being said, that's a long way out, Denny. There's so much that has to happen. You got to look at things happening in Nigeria first and try and play that forward. But it's not going to happen quickly. You know, Canada, my country, I don't think the Canadian dollar survives. Okay. I think we will be, if we're lucky, we embrace Bitcoin and we have Bitcoin and a US dollar derivative as our currency. If we're unlucky, we don't embrace Bitcoin and our currency fails and our whole country is the next Nigeria or Lebanon. So that's the bad case. The good case is, please, Canada, embrace Bitcoin, ensure our survival so we don't all have to learn to speak Spanish because of all the South Americans that are going to be so darn rich because they all own Bitcoin and Canada decided not to own it.
Very good, man. Would you talk to me a little bit about the Bitcoin development that you might see going on? I mentioned to you that I go to a lot of crypto conferences around Ireland. There's not really much Bitcoin stuff happening. It seems that the stuff being built on everything other than Bitcoin, and even at the crypto conferences, Bitcoin's not even mentioned. And for me, I was quite surprised at that. And you know, it's good to hear you hear on YouTube of developments and building on Bitcoin, but we just don't see it. What exciting things are you seeing? Can you share that with us?
Sure. Well, look, first of all, there's layer one Bitcoin, which is your digital gold or your digital energy. And then there's layer two and layer three applications that are very exciting. Don't tell me that the Lightning Network is not one of the most exciting applications you've ever seen. Okay. So I'll talk about that technology and the payment rails for the Lightning system and it disintermediating things like credit cards and remittances. All this other stuff, yeah, it could be exciting, but it's centralized and it's a fraud, okay? Half of the shit that's being built on shitcoins are frauds, okay? FTX was facilitating the development of frauds and it itself was a fraud. Celsius was a fraud. For Christ's sake, people, give your head a shake. Lots of the incentive to build a shitcoin is to enrich the inventor of the shitcoin and rug pull everyone else who invests in it. Are you guys that fucking stupid that you don't understand the incentive of criminal activity? Why do you think there's so much criminal activity on Wall Street? Because most of it is legal. They go there because they can legally defraud people. Bitcoin's the opposite. Bitcoin is the insurance against the fraud. I've spent 35 years on Wall Street. Trust me, there's a lot of nefarious activity that goes on there. Well, the shitcoin world makes Wall Street look like a pristine capital, okay? So don't be fooled by this technology bullshit that's being built on top of this other centralized altcoin that you're going to get rug pulled on. Will there be some survivors? Yeah, potentially, but I don't want to risk my money there. I'd rather go in common stocks for that type of risk rather than a decentralized shitcoin. That's a casino. The only use of a blockchain, I should say a centralized shitcoin, the only use of a blockchain is decentralized application, which is only Bitcoin. Putting Bitcoin in the headline, but having a centralized protocol, you're actually inefficient. Blockchain technology is not efficient. Centralized database technology is much more efficient than blockchain technology for a centralized application. Bitcoin is decentralized proof of work, store of value. They are radically different things. And if you get brainwashed by this idiot, oh, crypto this, crypto that, you deserve to lose all your money. You fool. You're a fool. Stay out of fucking managing money. You're a fool.
I go on a lot about, because I'm into exercise, like proof of work, it just relates to me. It's like, you know, when you see people and they're in good shape, it's not an accident. They've done the work. Or, you know, for anything, you see someone who's a master of their craft, you can't really cheat it. You just have to do the work. And that's the honest way. And that's sort of what I really relate to in Bitcoin, that, you know, the only way to get Bitcoin was to mine it or to purchase it or to exchange your work for it. There was no free Bitcoins. And that's what I really like about the honesty of it. And why, to me anyway, Bitcoin is so different than everything else in the crypto world, and like shouldn't really be when you see the list of crypto tokens or Bitcoin, it's like it should be in a different place because really it's a different thing.
Okay, you're totally understand right. It. Yeah, but here's the thing. Again, get together with Jim Duffy. You and I have talked offline. He struggled with this in Scotland. Okay, and then a lot of Bitcoiners start off as shitcoiners and then realize the folly of their ways. Okay. Ireland will be no different. Ireland went way off track in the great financial crisis, right before the great financial crisis, with all your mortgage shit that you guys were doing. That's essentially shit coining. It feels good for a short term, and then all of a sudden you have to pay the piper, and your fucking country almost went into the Atlantic Ocean, okay? Because you guys had done so much stupid shit in chicanery and mortgage chicanery and all that, okay? Shit coins are exactly that. Focus on Bitcoin is the insurance against the global fiat Ponzi. I don't care if you have to hold some of your assets in shitcoins just because you're a gambler. Go ahead. I'm not concerned about that. just own 5% of your portfolio in Bitcoin. And with the other 95% of your portfolio, do whatever the heck you want. Okay. You're a big boy and girl. Go lose all your money at the racetrack if you want, but own 5% of your portfolio in Bitcoin. Full stop. We don't need to talk about shit coins anymore.
Okay. Put the shit coins away. Is there anything else that you want to mention before I leave you go? I have one more question, but I just said I'd throw the open mic there to you to see if there's anything else you want to.
I would just say I love your show. I mean, I love your honesty. I love your history. Congratulations on pulling yourself out of a situation that must have been very heart-wrenching and very difficult. So good on you, kid. I'm proud of you because you are proof of work, and proof of work doesn't come easy. If it was easy, everybody would have it or do it. Okay. But Bitcoin is the veritable proof of work. It is not easy to understand it. I've studied it for thousands of hours, and I believe I'm still learning. I'm lucky to be surrounded by smart people like Lynn Alden and Jeff Booth, and, you know, meet people like you. We met in Amsterdam and met the CIO of a very famous global European company that's getting into Bitcoin over in Amsterdam. These are exciting things for me. Okay. All I want to say is I'd like to help you continue your journey however I can. That's about it.
Yeah. One of the great things, well, I'll give you two things. One is sometimes some of our biggest challenges become the best things. For me, having my accident and breaking my back was one of the best things that ever happened to me. It pivoted my life. I wasn't happy in the career I was in. I wasn't happy on the path of life I was on. I went right back to hospital bed, into mobile home, financial ruin, and rebuilt myself. And when I look at that, I'm like, it was bad at the time, but now it's like, that was the best thing that ever happened to me. And it's kind of funny.
I really like your style, man. I love your style.
Yeah. And I've totally forgotten what my second point was, but that's Dinny anyway. I can't hold two thoughts at once, Greg. I'm not a mega brain. It's like one thought at a time.
Well, look, there's different ways of. I think you said something interesting. I know, I've got it. Okay, you go.
I've got it.
Okay.
Let me get it out while I have it.
Yeah.
Bitcoin is hope. That's what I find for everyone. I orange pill, including myself. It gives you, without Bitcoin in our future, you know, you'd be looking around going like, how do we solve this problem? Am I just going to get a farm here and try and build a fence around my house and try and just create my own little community? But for me, I think Bitcoin is hope. It gives hope to people. It gives hope to people in Ireland who are struggling financially to, you know, and not a get rich quick. I don't teach it as that. I teach it as this is a long-term play. It's because of the asymmetry of it, as you say, you don't have to put a large amount of capital at risk. It's not like getting into property where you need $500,000 to go and buy the house and you take out all this leverage. It's like you can just use a little bit of your savings, live below your means, and you've got this little bit of hope that you're building. And the more you go down the rabbit hole of Bitcoin, you start to meet people, and they're positive people, and they're more hopeful people, and they're the people you got to be around, you know, because we are who we hang around with, and we are who we spend time with.
Okay, so you're totally right. Well said. Bitcoin is hope. Bitcoin is freedom. And I love both hope and I love freedom. One of the things that you said earlier is you said you thought that measuring success as money. Yeah, that's true. But money does not necessarily bring happiness. I know lots of people who died rich, but very unhappy. Okay. You got to balance your life. So keep doing what you're doing, educating people, opening their eyes to beautiful things, opening their eyes to hope and freedom. Keep up the good work.
Yeah. And I went down that rabbit hole of thinking that, you know, when you're financially struggling, your family financially struggles, you think money is to be on be all and end all. And it's only now that I'm a little bit older and a little bit wiser, I realized my father, although he wasn't obsessed with money, the man was obsessed with happiness, and he really understood what to get out of life. And he understood what it took me years to understand, is that time is the asset. To be able to spend your own time on your own terms. For him, he worked at home, he built his business at home.
Yeah,
you know, and that is the asset. And that's, I think, what we all work on, gives people hope that Bitcoin's going to give them back more of their time and their future.
Yes,
my last question, Greg, for you, and I asked this to all my guests just for a bit of fun, and you've sort of answered it already, but I'll just throw it out there because I always ask it. In 2030, what is the price of Bitcoin? That's like giving a day and a time. Maybe you won't answer it, will you?
Let's end it right there. So I can give a target, but not a time. So my target is $2 million US per Bitcoin in today's dollars.
Right.
I'm not giving you a time. You guys figure that shit out. And if you want to know where Bitcoin price is in the year 2030 relative to today, it's higher. But I'm not going to tell you what the price is. So give a target, but not a time. Never give both. You answered your own question. You see, you are actually very good at doing this. So good job, sir. You're listening.
Is there anywhere you would like to direct people, maybe Looking Glass Education or connect with yourself?
I'm sort of trying to get off of Twitter.
Yeah.
You talked about the coolness of the Lightning Network and the Lightning Protocol. Noster is sort of cool, but I'm not going to take my life to Noster yet because I'm too technologically illiterate to do it properly. But I do understand the decentralized sharing of information. I could get so deep into how Bitcoin is actually just information more than anything, but I won't. There's a kid in your backyard somewhere. His name is Luke Broyles. Okay, Luke_Broyles on Twitter. He's got less than 5,000 followers on Twitter, and he might have put out the most brilliant threads on Bitcoin I've ever seen. Okay,
I've seen them. Yeah, they're brilliant.
Okay, get him on your podcast. You don't have to listen to some white, old, fat Canadian guy. Get your own brilliance in your own backyard. Let's do some European Bitcoin meetups and Bitcoin conferences that blow the doors off the shitcoinery and actually get Bitcoin into portfolios in the proper weighting that can change our future. Because as your dad said, time is the most precious. And if Bitcoin allows you to spend more time feeling comfortable about the future, then I encourage you to own some Bitcoin.
Awesome. What a great way to sign it off. Greg, it's been a pleasure to have you on, man. Thanks for your time.
I look forward to doing this again if you'll have me, Denny. But let's stay in touch offline for sure because you're doing important stuff. So thank you again. God bless Ireland. I love rugby. I love I don't like European football that much, but very proud of...
You'd like hurling. We have wooden spoons and we bait each other.
I was going to say hurling. I didn't want to... I actually even know what a hurling stick looks like and everything like that, but I'm not sure if you call it a stick or a bat or whatever you call it, but I play hockey, so we call them hockey sticks. So anyway, listen, bro. Keep up the great work. Keep fighting the shitcoin narrative. This is about the future. This is about our children. It's for the kids. Own Bitcoin. God bless you.
Thanks, Greg.